Well, good morning, everyone. How are we? Good morning. Did you sneak up on me? Don't you attempt to sneak up on me. I heard you squeaking behind me. That's Gina's tells a story about how they didn't know until years, like they had all adults moved out of the house, but they all had the same suspicion that her parents could hear. And it was just a big fraud because both her parents are deaf. And as they raised in the house, it occurred to them, none of them ever talked about it, but they always had this thing in the back of their head, I wonder if they can really hear me. And they're just pretending, you know, that one day there'd be this come to Jesus moment. I heard what you said back in 1989. That's what I'm saying. You know, some people pray for healing and some people pray against the healing. Lord, just keep them deaf. Just keep them deaf. Ignorance is bliss, Lord. Yes, that's true. That's true. Her mom got carpal tunnel years ago. So she had a big old sleeve on this hand right here. And I always joked with her. I didn't make fun because we don't make fun. I said, you talk with a lisp now that you have that on you. I can't understand you. Go over there. Okay, not enough of the jokes.
You know, seriously, though, like, we don't think about what true silence is.
Oh,
because I've got an extended family member that was born deaf, and a friend of his was born without eardrums, and at one point they were able to put artificial ones in. He didn't last a few months. He was like, take them back out. I can't
stand
it. Silence is too noisy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, her mother could actually, they could do cochlear implants for her. And she's like, because it messes with your psychology, yeah. If you lived in a life of silence, it would be very overwhelming. It'd be very overwhelming. Okay, guys. Well, let's get into it. First week, we talked about the series we're on, for those who are just joining us, maybe. I don't know. We're talking about the Freedom of Love, February, month of love. And so we've been talking about the freedom to love, and specifically what brings the freedom to love, and at the gateway to that is forgiveness. And so, you know, we says to the extent that we can receive and understand more and more of God's forgiveness, his nature of forgiveness, the more and more we will grow the capacity to both experience and express God's forgiveness. And then in the first week, we got into talking about God's forgiveness toward us. You know, I think that's where it starts, because God's nature is love. And so as a fruit of that, God's nature is trying to bridge the gap by the methods that he prescribes. Not that we prescribe, but he prescribes. You know, and I was talking to a friend of mine this past week, and he was talking about this class he's taking, and it's a religious course, and so they're going through all of the various major world religions, and he got into talking about Islam some, and he was shocked to understand that their terminology for God was very, very similar. And I says, well, go back and ask the instructor this. Just ask him this one thing, because for the best of my studies, and I'm not a scholar by no means, but it is true, they share a lot of the same terminology, except one. And in their religion, it's actually considered, they call it shirk, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is blaspheme toward against God. And that is this: God is love. See, in Islam, God's not love. He shares every word that we have for Jehovah, they share for Allah, except one. And that's love. And see, without understanding that, think about that. That is the cornerstone, that is the bedrock in which the nature of God springs from. And without that revelation, without that understanding, what do you have? You just have a religion. You have a list of do's and don'ts, you know, can'ts and shouldn'ts and all of this other stuff. You have no means, methodology, mechanism to reach for God. Because Who are we without the love of God pulling on us and opening our eyes to our own plight and our own humanity? Who are we? We're nothing. But the grace of God on us and the love of God that woos us, it is the love of God that allows me to see me for me. You know what I'm saying? It's the grace and love of God that then tells me, but I don't have to be that. It's the love of God that gives me a mechanism, the cross, that bridges the gap, isn't it? See, it wasn't a religious exercise. It wasn't because of popular opinion, because of the religious crowd that set Barabbas free. It wasn't popular opinion, or the Pharisees and the Sadducees in the crowd, or the government authority, which is Pontius Pilate, that set Barabbas free. It was the love of God. Barabbas is me. Barabbas is me. Barabbas is you. We all deserve what Jesus got. But it was the love of God that says, love came calling. While Terry was yet a messed up dude, falling short in every way possible, he gave. He extended a hand. I never deserved it. And the reason I can love and the reason you can love is why? Because he first loved us. So in week one, we talk about the nature of God as love. Now, the thing about these terminologies and these both philosophical and theological ideas, they're lofty, they're high, they're sometimes outside of the grace of God on our minds. We can't fully comprehend them, can we? Because we naturally want to start projecting our own reality on what reality is. We want to project our own biases on what love is. And love is not defined by us. For those of us who are parents in here, you know as well as I do. It is just when you truly want your child to do well and they're little, that statement of little Johnny, little Susie, dad's proud of you, he wants you to do well, that is a loving moment just as it breaks my heart. But I'm going to have to take this away. I'm going to have to exercise this discipline because if I don't, I'm afraid I'm failing you as a parent. And whatever discipline that shapes, that's between you. But the point is this. When God tells us no, when God sets boundaries for us, that is just as much loving as it is when he says, you can do all things through him who strengthens you. It's the same love. It's coming from the same spot, isn't it? So the nature of God is love. And so we went into that. And we basically said the extent that we can start walking in, leaning into, and learning, and being intentional about forgiveness and accepting God's forgiveness, the more we're going to be able to accept his love. Because if we don't do that, what happens? Well, then we start rationalizing, don't we? Well, why would God love me? Look at, and then your mind starts going. And the whole list of things that would rationalize and justify him being angry with you starts taking place, doesn't it? So we have to learn. It's not for self-fulfillment. It's not even for self, it's not for you. It's not your self-interest. It's actually for the interest of everyone involved, for you to grasp, receive, and embrace the forgiveness of God so you can experience the love of God. Because that's the only thing that changes you. It's not his gifting on you. It's not his talents that he put in you. It's not any material blessing he ever gives you. It's not a personality type. It's not a physical physique. You know, we're all born with different talents, skills, abilities. But at the end of the day, none of that matters. What matters is what? The way we treat one another. The experience you have by being in my presence. the experience your family has by being in your presence. When you leave a room, what was the aroma left behind? Don't answer that. Some of y'all want to be funny. Depends on if I let me Poblitos, you know. It changes. But attitude smells, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
An attitude smells. You can pick up, you know, just the way you carry yourself, the expression, the nonverbal. You know, they say 90-some-odd percent, I forget the exact statistic, but, you know, there's an old thing that we used to do when we were teaching communication back in the day. I'd say, everybody, take your right hand and put it up right here. And everybody put their right hand up here. I said, now make the okay sign. Everybody make the okay sign. I says, now wave it around in a circle. And everybody wave it around in a circle. I says, now put it on your chin. And everybody put it on their forehead. Yeah.
That's weird.
And that exercise was to... Yeah. The exercise there was to prove one and one thing only. People don't hear what you say. They see what you do. And you can have all the right words in the world, but if my attitude, my actions, my expression, you know, and we in the South, we've mastered that, and we've talked about that. Bless your heart, you know, bless her heart. She's dumb as a brick, bless her heart, but she means well, you know. Yeah. What do we say? We just said something ugly.
It's an inauthentic heart and an inauthentic response.
Exactly. Well, unless they're from the South, and they go, "Oh yeah, yeah." But you know, we joke. But why is that especially prevalent in this area? Anybody want to take a guess?
Now,
I believe it's because we are the belt buckle of the Bible Belt, and sometimes we have adopted a religious mindset rather than a spiritual mindset, because religion talks about the way you act, and spirituality talks about who you are. And so we've put more emphasis on being, you know, putting that sweet tea and that molasses on the words, and not really challenge the actual words that we're articulating and the meaning behind them and the motives behind them. And I would rather someone say something to me in a blunt fashion that was true and kind and loving, then I would rather be cussed out by the greatest Christian in the world just because they know how to put the religious terminology on it and all this other stuff. I mean, some of the most hateful things ever been said to you could be said by someone that's spent a lifetime in church. Yes, ma'am.
Bitter root. You're putting sugar and salt and all this stuff on it to make it palatable, and then you're throwing it on somebody. That's still hot coffee.
It's still hot coffee.
It's like spilling the tea. Yeah.
The ingredients are still the ingredients. But
one thing of forgiveness I did this week is I said, I don't want to drink from the same cup as that person, so I'm going to offer the tea, and I'll pray over myself and her, and at the same time, that will cover both of us, because I'm going to slip, and I'm not like what she has to say. But in our actuality, the thing is, you got to find common ground, and you can't make peace if you're the one holding on to it or taking the fork and jabbing somebody.
That's right. So exactly right. But there's a duality here, that there's two tracks that when we're talking about communicating with one another, that the Lord is holding us to. This is the standard. First standard, by His own word, is I need to speak the truth to you. I need to be true. I don't need to say what my opinion is. I don't want to say anything but what is true. And period. Because how is relationships built? You know, you cannot build a relationship with yourself, with other people, your family, your spouse, if you do not have a relationship built on honesty, integrity, and truth. What kind of relationship do you have? You don't have a good relationship. Any of you guys in here have a pocket knife? Any men in here have a small? Huh? See if you can, before that falls out. That's about
it. I had to do that this morning, but I had to put glasses on to fix my glasses.
I can't see it, so I can't.
I can't.
Yeah, it's about to fall out. So the first track is truth, right? Well, what's the second track? Exactly. But what defines love? The truth first. Lying is not loving. Sometimes we avoid conflict by what? Lying. Now, is that what we're called to? But are we called to speak truth without love? It's just as bad, isn't it? We're called to speak truth in love. And I'm going to tell you right now, one of those will always be challenged. One of those always will be challenged when you're dealing with working with your family, working with your children, working with people at work, whatever life relationships bring you, you're always going to be in a situation where, gosh, I just don't want to say this. I love that person. I just don't want to say this. Or, you know, I really want to say this. Right? But slow your roll. How are you saying it? Yes, ma'am.
Sean always says to me, and I don't know why, he thinks I need this so much.
Don't tell on yourself now.
He says, you can say the right thing at the wrong time, and it will not have the desired result.
That's exactly right.
And that's how God treats me. He looks for when I'm ready to hear something, and then he speaks to me. And so if I can have his mindset when I speak to others and think about saying the right thing when they're ready to receive it, even it's not lying to hold it back until
no. When you're talking about speaking with each other, and that's the other thing, we have to, if we genuinely love one another, you know, who was it that says, was it, I'm going to get it wrong, Cain and Abel. Cain slew Abel. Yeah, and Cain went back, and his defense to God was, well, am I my brother's keeper? Yes. And if I have a relationship with you, one of the things I need to know is the context of your life. Is there anything...
character.
Lynn, is there anything wrong with me joking?
No.
Okay.
Well, like,
but can it be out of time and out of place? Yeah. I'm gonna lead the questions. You don't volunteer anything. Well, you just I'm answering yes or no questions. Yeah, and you're being bamboozled. I'm asking yes no questions. I'm not asking you. There's nothing wrong with joking. No. But is there a wrong place and a wrong time? And sometimes, and here's the thing I had to learn, Lynn. I had to learn that the context of people's lives go, if I am my brother's keeper and I genuinely love the people, then I need to understand this might not be the right time to be, you know, the clown. You know? And now, thank you, brother. Am I being dishonest by not who I am? Is I want to cut up. Isn't that right, Billy? Me and Billy will cut up, fall on the floor laughing. That's how much we'll cut up. You know, that's who I am. Is that wrong? No. Wrong place, wrong time, though, isn't it? If I genuinely love my wife, you, and others, I got to know sort of like the context of your life. And who I'm with at the time. Because what does that do? That tells me how this is going to land. Go ahead. You want to say, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to share something. You know, I did. It's not that I didn't like Pastor Terry. I mean,
well, that's because you wasn't paying attention.
No, for all his joking.
Just be blunt.
Yeah, just be blunt. Okay. So, no, I had a hard time with that because I'm like more of a deep person, maybe too deep sometimes. Well, a lot of times. But my heart wasn't bad about it. It was just I wanted to know. So I asked his wife in a quiet time in the coffee.
What is wrong with him? That's what you asked him.
I know what's wrong with me. But, no, I didn't know you. You were saying you need to know the context of a person's life. And the point of it was I honestly, she knew the sincerity of it. I said, does your husband ever... I mean, that's how it, you know, and it bothered me enough to ask. And she told me about how, you know, and she was telling me wonderful things about, yeah, and yeah, he does, and this and that. But I only saw that side of the comedy act.
Yeah, which is not that great.
No, it is good. But,
well, thank you.
No, I love him. I love him. And so when I was walking into the, I mentioned that, and his face fell. You really wanted to not be...
Yeah,
in any way, and that sold it for me. That's it. I'm sold.
I mean,
and not so many pies in the face after that, but the bidding.
But
your
bidding needs to keep going. Yeah, we're gonna stop. By the way, we're stopping at this year because I got too much up the nose.
But I relate to that because when you are engaged in something and you're in the play and somebody interjects something that is not of the context, it throws you out of there, and you're desiring to be in that. And I think that's understanding how you operate. You say, I need to.
Not be as irritated from the situation.
Right. Yeah. If I'm engaged in my work and somebody calls me for something meaningless that I have to, it instantly aggravates me.
Yeah.
Not because I don't love them, because I'm engaged in what I'm
right.
doing.
Right. It's an interruption.
You don't just go right back to a thread. You have to.
Right.
There's something about the magic of learning.
Right. I totally get it. Totally get it. But that here again, that's. That is understanding one another and loving one another, you know, because, see, communication, good or bad, that's a skill. Sometimes a poor skill, sometimes it's a good skill, whatever. But what transcends all of this is love. You know, listening is a skill. Speaking is a skill. Love is what makes it work. Without love, was you going to say something? That's right. That's exactly right.
Discerning the time.
Discerning the times. Exactly.
You know, I had one time everybody was, you need to apologize. You need to apologize to a certain individual. And I was like, I didn't do anything wrong at that time. So, but I'm wearing it. And you know, in prayer, it was like, you know, I said, Lord, is it time for me to go, you know, apologize or forgive or whatever, just to confront? And he's like, no, because the time is not right. What you do now will draw it further apart.
Exactly.
You know, and then one day I was in prayer, and he's like, go, like, right now. He's like,
that's great.
Yep, right now. And so it was received, and 2 weeks later I got a car out of it.
There you go. There you go. Well, I would, yeah.
The other option is available where you go to say sorry, and the Lord tells you to give them $1,000, too, so it goes.
or a piano. Sure. It's a coping mechanism.
Yeah, the person that, you know, can't you get serious about anything, you know, that type of person, Robin Williams, comedian.
Most comedians, you're right, Jeff, if you'll study the life of most comedians, it is horrid what they've gone through in the life, and that's why they're clowning a lot, and their substance abuse, all of this is a masking. Yeah, and I could be guilty of that, you know. Sometimes, you know, it's better to joke about it and cry about it, you know, one or the other. But I would encourage you, going back to, has anyone ever served jury duty in here? Yeah. Do you remember the admonition of the judge when he says, when you hear someone get up on the stand and testify, they're not testifying to what was said. They're testifying to what they heard. What do you think about that? Eyewitness, ear witness. All we can do is testify to what we saw, what we heard. Now, what does that mean? Based on my perception, my vantage point, my understanding of the situation in the context of everything I bring, this is what I saw or heard. That doesn't mean that's what happened. How many know social media in the last 10, 12 years has gotten the world enraged because they take a snippet video of something that happened, place it out of context, and create this entire narrative around it? Now, you can say, well, this is what I saw and heard, but do you have the full context of it?
Exactly.
Right? So when you think that way, think about that way of the way we measure our words with one another and the way we communicate with one another. Because I'm like Mike. Sometimes I've been, hey, you need to go and talk to so-and-so. They feel this way. And I was like, oh, why do they feel that way? I didn't say that. That's, what am I saying? This is what I meant. These are my motives. These are my intentions. But does anyone know the heart of another man? No. So what all we can go off of is what someone else heard, thought, understood. And to the extent that my words meant this or my actions meant this to you, I am sorry, because those are not my intentions. But we can't get defensive, and we can't get like, well, they shouldn't have. What they should and shouldn't is not my problem, is it? What they should and shouldn't is between them and God. What I own is what I said and did and my intentions. Yes, ma'am, and I'll get you. Oh, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, go ahead. Tell on me. Tell me.
I can't tell it.
Terry said.
You share that because it really was.
Every time he talks, it's over Gina's head, and that's what I said. No.
oh, goodness. That's good.
Yeah. See, that's good. That's good. Yeah. One of the things.
Oh,
not kidding. You get it? For those in the back row, that was a short joke, yeah. Now, one of the things we learn when we get heated, the more and more you are emotionally raw about a subject, the less and less you have the ability to hear what's being said. And when you're in those moments of extreme divergence of perspective, you like it? You like it? Because we don't argue. We're too spiritual for that. But we have extreme discussions on how our perspectives diverge. It has served us to, if she's coming and saying this to me, I cannot even make my counterpoint. I can't even make a response. I can't do anything until I do this. I have to articulate back to her what I understand her saying. And until I can quantify and clearly articulate what I hear you saying is, and what that means is this, and what you're expecting. I have to, until she says, yes, that is what I'm saying, I can't move forward, and vice versa. Because if you don't do that, what happens? We're going doing this, and 95% of what we're saying to each other is going right, because I'm not listening to you, I'm trying to make my point, right? Well, why, who does that help? Nobody. And here's the other thing is, who does that heal? And I'm going to tell you more times than not, by having to do that, both of us have not even decided, we didn't even make our counterpoint. It's amazing how you let the grace of God, when you do that as an exercise, with any relationship, but especially in marriage, but with any relationship, don't respond to what you want them to hear from you. The only thing you can do is, this is what I heard. Where am I missing it? And then let them, okay, so what that means is, until I can, they have to sign off on, you got it. You got, until I get that, I can't do anything. If we put that in as a rule, as a relationship, you will be amazed how it has saved so much cuts, bruises, gunshots, you know, because sometimes, you know, the negotiations get intense. Do what? Yeah, like a campground. Exactly. And some of us, I'm not going to say who, don't fight fair. That's just all I'm going to say. Yeah. So anyway, so we got to get down to number three. Did I skip him? Did someone have their hand up? Did I articulate what you wanted me to say? Okay. So this is week three, and what we're talking about in week three, there's a couple stories I want to talk about real quick. And so we were talking about in week one, the nature of God, which is forgiveness. Week two, we talked about why we should forgive others. And we got into this right here, that what is love? Love is patient. Love is kind. Love it, chapter 13 in Corinthians, right? First Corinthians chapter 13. We went through the whole thing, what love is. And then we said there is a perverse opposite to that. If love is a seedbed that grows out of, fear is a seedbed that the counter to that. So if we really want to start going after, if we want to stop the behavior, then we address the belief system that the behavior comes out of, right? Because if we just address the behavior and not the belief system, we've addressed it for a day, but it comes back tomorrow, right? If I believe I'm no good, if I believe I'm not worthy, if I believe I'm just so-and-so from such-and-such, if that's my belief system, then you might get me today to act a certain way, to be more of this way that I should be, to be more giving, to be more benevolent, to be more understanding, to be more, all of the things that I should be. I'll behave that way for a day, but tomorrow I'm going to go back to woe is me. Well, what about me? No one thinks, you know what I'm saying? Why? Because my belief system hasn't changed. So we can modify behavior, but we can't transform it. Only the renewing of the mind, right, transforms the behavior. So we talked about how if we want to go after, if you find yourself acting out impatiently or acting out, here's the prayer. It's not, Lord, forgive me for being impatient with my kids. Yes, true. But more importantly, Lord, reveal to me the fear that I'm operating in that's causing me to be impatient with this person here. And you'll be amazed at how he'll reveal that to you. Well, Terry, you're being impatient with him because you're fearful of this, this, and this. And my word says this. And now I can take his word, address the fear. And Charlie, what does that mean? I know how to pray. Because now he says, greater is me. Greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. And I start claiming these scriptures, and I start washing my mind with these scriptures, and all of a sudden, I'm not operating out of fear, but I'm operating out of faith that comes by the hearing of the word, right? And as my belief system has modified, as a result, without me even trying, behavior follows. But we should waste so much time and energy on what? Trying to modify behavior when the problem is the beliefs. So that's what we talked about last week. We got just a few moments. So I want to get into what we're supposed to be talking about. And I've been chasing rabbits. Kill the rabbit. Yeah. Yeah. I thought I saw a rabbit. Okay, so the week three, where are you at, Terry? We're talking about the freedom of forgiveness. There's two scriptures that you can go and read later on, the story of Luke 7, verses 36 and 50. Luke 7, 36, 50, read that sometimes, and then Matthew 18, 21 through 35. Both of those are familiar stories. One story is where Jesus goes to the house with Pharisees and the disciples, and what happens? This woman all of a sudden comes up and starts crying at his feet, washing his feet and drying them with her hair. So what does the crowd do? Oh, how undignified. Oh, my word. Can you believe? Folks today, they just have no sense of decorum. And they just judge that woman up and down. And what was Jesus' response? His response was to Peter, because Peter starts challenging him on it. It says, Peter, if you knew all about this woman and the forgiveness that she has received from me, because to whom much is given, much is worth, you would understand why she is so grateful. Isn't it amazing when you really start understanding, you really start digging into how much God has forgiven you and the forgiveness that we walk in. The natural offspring, that's what's gratitude. And it's hard to judge others from a grateful heart. If you're judgmental, it comes from ungratefulness. If you're ungrateful, it comes from the fact that you don't understand the level in which you have been forgiven.
We all started dirty. Don't remember that.
We came from dust. From dust to dust.
So the self-righteous are the ones that will point the finger and say, I did all of this, but they model the
Oh, yeah.
There's a
well, the one's just behavior. I'm going here to learn how to behave so I can say, bless your heart. But just say some of the ugliest stuff, right? So we're modifying behavior, not talking about beliefs at all, because beliefs is what gets into us, receiving the forgiveness of God, understanding his love. But that's where we get into this judgmental heart. So that's that story. And then in Matthew, what is the story? Matthew, the story over there is these debtors go to the king, and he forgives the debt of one guy, big debt. And what does this dude go? He goes out and beats up on a guy that owes him just a few bucks. I mean, he's been had his slate wiped clean, and then he goes out there and a guy owes him a few dollars, and he's just wearing him out. You know, and so that's what does that mean? He doesn't really appreciate the level of grace that he's walking in and the level of mercy. So that's all. What does that tell you and I? Anytime, I hear you, Randy. I hear you, Randy. I hear you, Randy. Okay. I can do the same thing. Wrap it up. Wow. All right, let's get into this. So here's I'm going to just throw these out because Randy's running me off. We need a paying gig, Randy. So here's here I wanted to get into this because revelation without application is just what? Pontification. And God knows I don't want to be just pontificating. So here's some things you can use. benefits of forgiveness. Here's some real benefits. You want to know? How many is feeling stressed in here? Ever feel stressed? Ever struggle from stress and anxiety? Anybody in there? Do you know the remedy to that? Forgiveness. Forgiveness. Holding on to bitterness triggers the body's stress response, increasing cortisol levels, which can lead to anxiety, high blood pressure, and tension. Did you know that? Forgiveness allows us to relieve those negative emotions, reducing overall stress. Biblical connection, the woman in Luke 7 was emotionally burdened by her past, but her encounter with Christ's forgiveness set her free, allowing her to do what? Love more deeply, right? It improves mental health. Did you know that? Number two, here's a benefit for forgiveness. Anyone struggling with emotional and mental health issues? Studies have shown that forgiveness reduces symptoms of depression, PTSD, and anger issues, right? It's not an issue. I just stay angry. No, it's an issue. So it helps reframe painful memories. You know, I love what Paul said. There's purpose for your pain. Everything that's ever touched me has gone through the sovereign hand of God. Nothing has touched my life that has not gone through the sovereign hands of God. You know what that means? Everything that's touched me, good and bad, can be used for his purpose. Which means it doesn't have to be something that held me back, but it's something that set me up. Set me up for greater. Right? We get to choose. You get to choose. We have the freedom of choice. One of the most powerful gifts God's ever given us is the freedom of choice. I get to choose. What did this event in my life mean? I get to choose the meaning we give things. I'm going to say that again. You and you alone, through the grace of God, get to decide, get to choose, what did this, fill in the blank, mean? What's the meaning? The meaning could be, well, this is just one more example of why I am fill in the blank, I'm this, and never going to. Or it could mean, it means that God in his glory and grace allowed me to go through this, to learn this, to get this, to learn this, to have this, to have this anointing. Listen, the only reason I've been able to do just a tiny little bit of anything, I would never be able to do some of the things had God not allowed me to experience some of the most painful things I believe I could ever experience. But now I can with credibility go in and say, I know what it's like to have an abusive father. I know what it's like to come from this background, this complicated background. I know what it's like to be broke, busted, and disgusted in the food line trying to look for bread of crumb just to feed a family. I know what it's like. I don't come from some philosophical, well, this might work. Let me tell you what God has done for me. The same God that has used that in me is the same God that is using it in you. We get to decide. We get to choose. That is not an affront to his sovereignty. That is a grace that he has given. Choose you this day. What does it mean? What does it mean? So one of the things that you have to do to wring out all the meaning and the glory out of something is learn to forgive. Who are you forgiving? Maybe I need to forgive myself. Maybe I need to forgive others. Maybe I need to forgive God. But I got to forgive. That's what accesses it. Number three is increase the capacity to love and be loved and create healthier relationships. And number four, the benefit is a greater sense of freedom and purpose. I tell you, I love the saying, and because of my age, I've lost the ability to recall who said it. I can't remember who said it. But he says the two greatest times in a person's life is the day where they were born and the day they discovered why. The day you discover why, I'm telling you, life takes on a whole new meaning and passion. You don't wake up saying, good Lord, it's morning. You wake up and say, good Lord, good morning, Lord. Amen. Now, before Randy runs me off, here's five exercises I'm going to give you real quick in less than a minute. Recognize how much you've been forgiven. So if you want to learn how to forgive better, meditate on the forgiveness you've been given. That will generate gratitude. Practice empathy. Intentionally practice empathy. Now, how do you practice empathy? By shifting perspectives and empathizing with someone else. Rather than saying, I wish so-and-so wouldn't do such-and-such, ask yourself, why is so-and-so doing such-and-such? What's causing that? So practice empathy. Number three, release control over justice. Release control over justice. One of the hardest things in today's society is, it's unjust. There's a sense of, release it. Let go and, come on, people, let God. Reframe the pain. Romans 8:28. Reframe the pain. That's one way that you can learn how to forgive. And number five, practice daily forgiveness and small acts of grace. Okay, so if you need those, I can give them out to you and expand on that. But we didn't have time because Mike wanted to talk about things for 20 minutes. And that was hysterical. I thought. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Lord, we thank you this morning. We're so grateful for who you are. We thank you for giving us the grace and mercy to learn more about you, not just from an intellectual level, but a relationship level, to know your nature and to be around your presence and understand your heart and your attitude toward things, God, that you take the words off the paper and you make it reality to us. So it's not just some philosophy that we live by, but it's a reality we live in. So, Lord, we just ask you right now to arrest our hearts, our minds, our spirits, God, and we would come in unity together with one purpose, and that is to lift your name up this morning. We ask you to anoint the worship this morning. Let your presence fall on this place. Anoint the words this morning as the message comes out. God, let your heart, your attitude, your thoughts toward us, you, and life be revealed in each one of us today. In your name we pray. Amen.